On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. What does the Lakers franchise being sold to Bob Iger and Josh Kushner mean for the future of Luka Doncic? And what can we expect on the court for the LA Lakers without LeBron? Plus, which players coming off injuries are we most excited to see in this upcoming season? All this and more coming up right now. Welcome, 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 welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, and as always, we are joined by our man, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, it's been a minute since we've hopped on the show. I had some time off. It was a really wonderful time for me and my family. And then we had this big, the NBA seemed to go up in flames on Monday. So we are back. We're ready to talk about it, all of it. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah. I mean, you left for like a second and Russell Westbrook retired. The Clippers thing went nuts again. And now the Lakers got sold, I think, like four times in the last day and a half. So don't leave, I guess, Tom. This is what we find out in the middle of August at this point in our lives. There is no August anymore, man. It's all October. It's all June. It's all happening all the time. But let's get over it. Let's get to it. Hit me with it, Tom. What is this week's big number?
Dan, this week's big number is $12.5 billion. Yeah. That is the reported sale price of the Los Angeles Lakers. Josh Kushner and Bob Iger are reportedly coming together, according to ESPN, for a massive record-breaking sales price to buy the Lakers from Mark Walter, who, for those keeping track at home, he just bought the Lakers like 10 months ago. And Adam Silver in the press conference or in a statement said he's going to be a committed steward of the Los Angeles Lakers, and he's going to be a welcome addition to all of the controlling owners of the Lakers franchise. And then he flips it like he's on HGTV. I mean, this is a wild, wild storyline in terms of like NBA business stories. Dan, as we've been covering the league, this one's got to be up there, right? For you, for me, this one, the Lakers, after being Jerry Buss owned for 40 plus years within the family, the fact that it's gotten sold once is a absolutely mind-blowing occurrence in the NBA. And then for them to get flipped in less than a year as feds, authorities seize the laptop and the phone of the owner right before Adam Silver announces that he's going to be a great owner for the league. Now he's selling again. So, Dan, not to turn this into a CNBC segment, but this is a wild story. No matter if you are a finance bro or if you are an NBA junkie, this is pretty crazy.
Yeah, there are like kind of two royal organizations in the NBA, right? There's the Lakers and the Celtics, going back, you know, decades throughout NBA history, vying for the crown of the, you know, the most NBA championships. You know, you've got, you know, basically entire wings of the Hall of Fame are devoted to the players that have worn those uniforms and the coaches that have led them and the executives that have led them to those championships. And for one of them, I think that, you know, that graphic was instructive. When the Lakers were sold, when Walter bought the Lakers the first time, it was essentially the next two franchise purchases combined, right? Like the Celtics went for a $6.1 million valuation. The Blazers were, I think, a little bit over four, and the Lakers went for 10. Like an indication of sort of where, between market size and brand equity and like the way, you know, the Los Angeles Lakers being this like globally understood, this is where the superstars go. This is where the champions are. And it's in Hollywood and yada, 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 right? And the media market and all that. And so when that happened last summer or last September, it was like seismic. Oh my gosh. We've never in our lifetimes seen a franchise this sort of august and iconic go in this way, right? We've literally never seen this franchise do it. And now for it to happen a second time in a year and for it to happen under, as you mentioned, the cloud of investigation that, you know, the federal government looking into whether or not Mark Walter was like, has been taking money from his various insurance companies and then putting them into the purchasing of all these different sports franchises and sports investments that he's involved in, and whether he had not properly disclosed that and to what degree taking money out of like retire or like life insurance funds and things like that and putting that into play here. Like that's a matter, going to be a matter for the courts. And, you know, there could be some serious repercussions coming from that. But like, from the perspective of this is where the NBA kind of is now, that we are talking about, it's not just, you know, local businessman, card player guy, real estate magnate who really liked the game, buys the team. It's multinational, multi-billion dollar conglomerates with one another. And also, where is the rest of the money coming from? Question mark about some of those, those situations. Because if you just add up the like net worth of Bob Iger and Josh Kushner, it's still short of the 12.5. So like, where's the rest of that money coming from? This coming on the heels a couple years ago of, more of private equity is allowed. That's okay. You know, maybe even like sovereign wealth funds, more of that is allowed too. In mirroring like the English Premier League or other sort of major global sports. This is where we are now. The numbers are so big that I don't know if we can fit them all on the screen when we do the big number at this point, but this is where we are. And so now the question is like, A, this becomes a soap opera, right? Where we've got the Bus family, a renewable resource. A renewable resource in terms of NBA drama for quite some time. You know, squabbling over who owns what and who can sell what and so on and so forth, which also might be tied up in the courts. And oh, by the way, like, this is the Lakers. This is a team that, is perennially expected to be competing for championships, that has one of the handful of best players in the world in Luka Doncic, and who now, it seems like every time he turns around, he's got a new owner of his franchise. And we're all sort of left to sift, what does this mean for the actual team and the franchise and what it means to buy an NBA? It's a pretty big friggin' story, Tom, and that's a pretty big friggin' number to go with it.
Yeah, it's 8 zeros after the 12 and the 5. I'm reading The Phantom Tollbooth with my daughter right now, and it's one of my favorite books as a kid. And we're in the section of The Road to Infinity, and the the mathemagician is asking, what is the biggest number? And the kid goes, oh, it's 999,999,999,999. And the mathemagician says, now add one to it. And add another one to it. And I'm sitting here like, is this a Lakers story that we're talking about? Is that the Lakers are just going bigger and bigger and bigger? And like the guy, Mark Walter, bought the Lakers for $10 billion or at valuation of $10 billion last year, and then flips it for $2.5 billion more of a valuation reportedly. Now, we can sit here as we're recording this on a Wednesday and say the NBA has not approved this sale yet. It's probably going to take a couple months, a few months for the lawyers, a lot of billable hours, not just on the Walter sale of it, but also on the Jeannie Buss family, the whole family drama here. Is Jeannie Buss is the controlling governor, the controlling owner of the Lakers. And when Mark Walter sells his shares to the Kushner-Iger group, she's like, yeah, I'm good because I still have 17.8% of the Lakers and I'm the governor for the next foreseeable future. And then on Monday, we find out that the Buss family, the five siblings, not named Jeannie Buss, decided, nope, we're selling as a tag-along clause, which is part of the agreement in the Mark Walter sale, that the Buss family could say, you know what, if you sell, Mark, we have the option. We can exercise an option to tag along with the sale. And so unbeknownst to Jeannie, they decided to do this. And Jeannie's like, wait, hold on. You can't do that. And there's a lawyer with the last name Streisand. I don't even know if he's related to Barbara or not, but of course that would not even be a blip on the radar at this point because of how crazy this story is. Jeannie goes out and says, excuse me, no, you can't do that. Because I'm the controlling governor and we signed some paperwork in 2017 in a court opinion, in a court case that said the Buss family has to essentially keep me above 15% ownership and keep me the governor of the Lakers. You can't do this. So now that's going to go to the court. And of course, the NBA has to figure out, does Josh Kushner and Bob Iger have the money to put up for $12.5 billion valuation? And this is an important thing because Henry Abbott over at truehoop.com just did an incredible breakdown of how the heck is Josh Kushner and Bob Iger going to come up with enough money to buy the Lakers when reportedly Kushner and Bob Iger, Iger's worth much less than Kushner. It's like half of that valuation, $12.5 billion. So go check out truehoop.com if you want the whole breakdown from Henry. It's incredible. But the bottom line is there's a lot that needs to be settled here, like legally and just the dust settling, that right now we're just like everybody else. Our heads are spinning. And I think one person, by the way, that for those watching on YouTube, that's Adam Silver, Josh Kushner, Bob Iger, sitting there at the U.S. Open a couple years ago together. They're very close, Iger and Adam Silver. Of course, they came together in 2020 to relaunch the NBA season in the middle of the pandemic in at Walt Disney World in Orlando. And they've been close before and ever since. And here we go with Mark Walter. And one of the crazy parts of this story, Dan, is a couple years ago, we booed Nico Harrison for not putting Luka Doncic on the trade block and doing a secret handshake deal with Rob Pelinka, being like, we're not even going to tell anybody that Luka Doncic is on the trade block. I'm just going to gift him to the Lakers. You good with that, Rob? Yep, I'm good with that. The Lakers just did that with this sale.
With the Lakers.
The Lakers! Like, they're like, huh, I like that, Nico Harrison. Nice work with Luka Doncic. We're going to copy that playbook, and we're going to do that for the sale. Like, as far as we knew, when Ramona Shelburne reported that this sale had happened last Friday, I don't think anybody knew that the Lakers were on for sale. And I don't think people realize how bad this could potentially be, that he has to cover what reportedly looks like $20 billion worth of paying off loans. And so that's why he's trying to sell the Lakers, it seems, is he's got to come up with cash quickly. And there's a report that he's trying to sell. Walter is trying to sell his stake in the Chelsea Football Club. And I got to imagine that the Dodgers are not too far away here. Like, if you are trying to sell $20 billion of assets and the Lakers, look, he's not going to be able to sell $12 billion, or basically the $12 billion is not his. The Buss family has a big chunk of that. And so, and he also doesn't have it in cash. So it's going to be a bottom line is, I think the Dodgers are next. And I think this is going to be a huge problem for sports, is if this guy is liquidating his sports assets, that puts a lot of upheaval. And I think that with Kushner, people need to also understand he is the brother of Jared Kushner, who's married to Ivanka Trump, the daughter of President Trump, and also the son of Charles Kushner, who tried to buy the New Jersey Nets. I don't know if you remember this. When Bruce Ratner bought the team, he bid $300 million in 2004, and he beat the bid of a Charles Kushner, who tried to buy the New Jersey Nets back in 2003 for $200 million and tried to promise another $100 million later and ended up not getting the team. Another piece of this, Josh Kushner was a part owner of the Miami Heat. Last year, the Miami Heat acknowledged that Josh Kushner had bought a small slice of the Miami Heat, less than 5%, and it was not a piece of Mickey Arison's share. This was another piece of the organization that Josh Kushner bought into. So Kushner went from the Memphis Grizzlies, he bought a small slice, then parlayed that into a small slice of the Miami Heat where he lives, and now is parlaying that into the Los Angeles Lakers. It's crazy. And I wonder how crazy this is all to Luka Doncic. Dan, that, like, we're going to bring this back to the basketball side of things. Luka Doncic, you mentioned how many different owners we've been seeing over the last few years, whether it's the Boston sale or the Portland sale. Well, the Dallas Mavericks also sold from Mark Cuban. No one thought Mark Cuban would ever sell. Jeannie Buss would never sell. And now both of them, it appears, are not going to have the controlling interest of their clubs. I think I did the math on this. Luka Doncic will have played for 5 different owners in like 3 years, less than 3 years. So Mark Cuban, then the Dumont Adelson family, And then the Genie Bus, Mark Walter groups. And then now it's going to be Kushner and Iger. So Luka Doncic, maybe the brightest young star in the NBA, if you want to call it to Victor Wembanyama, sure. But everyone else is wondering in NBA circles, how does Luka Doncic feel about this? Is this feel like he wants to continue playing for the Lakers that gave him an extension during all of this? He hasn't mentioned that all of this is too much for him, but this is some pretty unstable ground. And so I think not only is this a business story, but it's a huge NBA story because at the center of it all is a guy who might be the best player in the league when he's healthy, Luka Doncic, who might be like, do I really want to hitch my wagon to a team that an asset that is being flipped every 10 months? So yeah, Dan, there is a real basketball story here too.
Well, I think from, you know, I don't know if you can know if you know this about me. I'm not like an elite level athlete. I have not been an NBA, you know, all-star, all-NBA talent. I imagine that if you are that sort of person, what you're interested in ownership is, yeah, stability if you can get it. And then if not that, the deepest pockets possible and the greatest willingness to sign as many checks as possible to get you where you want to be, which is consistently competing for championships. And I think Luka Doncic got a cold cup of coffee and, you know, splashed by water when all of everything that he was building in Dallas was yanked away. And then he has seen, obviously, the sort of, you know, musical chairs in LA. And very quickly, as soon as the news of the sale came out, released a statement that was basically like, being a Laker means everything to me. And I've had great relationships and I look forward to building new great relationships when I meet these people. And I think that, the iconic franchise, there's no limit to the iconic franchise, no matter what happens around it. And so from the player's perspective, I think they're looking at it and saying, whoever signs the checks kind of doesn't matter so long as we sign the checks. And the concern that you'd have if you were a member of the Lakers organization or, you know, Mark Walter in his relatively brief term, there was significant layoffs, restructuring of how the organization was going to work. There was the brief sort of interregnum of like, yeah, no, Dodgers people are going to start consulting on everything. We are hiring, you know, multiple new assistant general managers under Rob Pelinka. And then like in the middle of that restructuring, everything gets thrown into upheaval, right? Like now, I guess the glass half full side from an on-court perspective for the Lakers next year or moving forward is they did all their summer business, right? Like they move on from LeBron, they bring in Walker Kessler, they re-sign Austin Reeves, they sign multiple, you know, like 4-year deals for multiple guys that they brought in. They've got the core of what they intend to compete with on the floor moving forward, and JJ Redick is there in place. So like, whatever upheaval around it is happening, that should still remain stable. Okay. However, the question of like, what does our pro scouting look like? What does our analytics department look like? Who runs what? You know, who's in charge of which parts of the business? Rob Pelinka, that I'm going to go back to because it was a funny quote from Dave McMenamin, right? This was a quote that an agent gave to ESPN's Dave McMenamin. Quote, as long as Genie's in a good position, I think Rob's in a good position. And that was before everything with the other bus siblings essentially trying to oust Genie, and then Genie saying, not so fast, my friend, we're going to tie this up in court. I don't know how good a position Genie Bus is going to be in, which means, does the general manager and president of basketball operations for your organization, is he on stable ground? Questions of whether he should be on stable ground, I'll leave to Lakers fans who certainly have a lot of opinions about that topic. But like all of the surrounding stuff, how are we building? What is the identity to which we want the organization to accrue? Like, and then the broader part, if you are looking at people who are coming in from like the private equity world, the sort of in the further like financier investment banking class, generally speaking, the move is like, how do we optimize the value of the asset here? Not like, how do we spend as much as possible to make it great? It's how do we figure out how to get as much revenue out of it as we can? And so, you know, like Mark Walter installing the second row of seats by courtside, right? To get more there, you know, the new Jersey patch partnership that was, you know, was inked before they go. Does the new management structure lean more in that direction? And is that more like extractive than investing? I think those are pretty reasonable questions that I would want to have answers to if I was like, I want to tie, I'm going to be the thing that people want to come see. And I'm tying myself through my prime from Luka Doncic to this organization? Like, are we going to be an organization that is just trying to like make line go up, or are we going to be an organization that's trying to win at whatever cost we can, you know, at whatever cost it takes? And I think all of those questions become more and more pressing when all of the surrounding ownership questions and management questions are up in the air to the degree that they are right now.
Yeah. It's a great point, because I think when you're Luka Doncic, you want to know who's like, if I want to make a trade, or if I want to make, you know, changes to the roster, who do I call to like, hey, I would like to get help with a rim protector, or I would like another ball handler on the team. Who does he, is it Rob Pelinka, or is it someone else that Bob Iger and Josh Kushner bring in? Those are very important things when it's you're one of the top five players in the NBA, that you want to know who you talk to, who's the leader on the team. And if we can, to Emmy and the producers, I would like to bring up that quote again that he had for Josh and Bob when they bought the team, the most recent quote from Luka Doncic, kind of giving them support. I'm going to read to you, while this is on the screen, Dan, I'm going to read to you last year's quote when Mark Walter bought the team. And you can compare the notes here. Luka Doncic on June 19, 2025. The Lakers are an amazing organization. I'm looking forward to meeting Mark and excited about the future. I am also grateful to Jeannie and the Buss family for welcoming me to LA. And I'm happy that Jeannie will continue to be involved. I look forward to working with both of them to win championships. Okay. He cut out the line of championships. All right. So he's just said we can get to work building something special in LA together. It's a copy and paste for him. He's like, what do I got to say?
Kind of like Luka GPT. Like, you know, what's going on here?
But I don't blame him. He's like, wait, we have another owner that I got to say, yeah, I'm optimistic about what we can build together. He just had this same statement last year. So I guess my point is, for Luka, he has to know, one, who's running the organization. And to your point, we don't know until the Jeannie Buss situation is figured out, because as one of the crazy quotes that we've had over the last few days is Bob Iger reportedly said that, he's happy to work with Jeannie. And then if things change, they will change. Reminds me of a certain quote, if he bleeds, he bleeds. It's just like, what is going on here? But ultimately,
hang on. Before we get moving on, I want to say, you know, go back to the point you made about Adam Silver saying when Mark Walter bought the team about him being a, you know, like sort of a steward, right? Like this guy's going to be a phenomenal, caretaker of this iconic franchise, this, you know, glittering glamour brand in the NBA world, in the world of sports overall. You know, we've seen what he did with the Dodgers, you know, in terms of, you know, investing whatever it takes there for getting them to consistent championship competition. We believe he's going to be that same kind of leader for the Lakers. And then in the space of a year, that's not the case anymore. And then also, as you said, you mentioned, Adam Silver's making that statement after federal agents have already gone on Mark Walter's private jet to take his devices for forensic, investigation. I think one thing, and we don't have to get too soapboxy about this. I'm not that smart a guy. I'm wearing a red shirt that says Otis on it. I can't be all that bright. But what I'm saying is, I think it's worth considering at this stage in the NBA, what being a steward really is, right? Like, we have thought about these franchises as public trusts, right? Sort of civic institutions, something that a person buys and keeps, and is it like an investment in a population that's handed down, you know, parents to kids. It's like a parochial community asset, right? And we think about, like, you know, Jurassic Park out in Toronto when they were on their finals run. We think about the celebrations in the streets in the Deer District in Milwaukee. We think about what it looked like in New York with the Knicks making their run. And this idea of, like, these are community properties, essentially. And I think throughout this, the commissioner's tenure, and throughout the increasing bump, 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 bump of these valuations and the prices paid for them and the dwindling number of individuals who have the net worth and liquidity to actually be able to do these things themselves, what does being a steward of a team and a franchise really mean now? Does it really just mean I can get it to, yeah, we'll have whatever it costs, but then like when it's time for me to go, I get it to somebody else who can pay even more for it so that the line keeps going up? And is that what the NBA is really like stewarding more now? The perpetual increase of valuation versus like what the investment of, you know, fans and people and the people who have been involved in helping build this to a point where it is the kind of asset that can get a $76 billion media rights deal, which, by the way, Adam Silver negotiated with Bob Iger in part over the course of years. So that's another area of that relationship. What are we stewarding? You know, what are we shepherding? And who are the people that the NBA is really trusting to do that? We have in recent months had significant questions about Tom Dundon in Portland and what his relationship to that idea of stewardship of an organization is. There's questions about Steve Ballmer and the ongoing Clippers investigation and whether the NBA at this point even could really levy much in the way of sanctions against it, somebody who is one of that dwindling class of people who can afford to buy one of these places and actually put in their own money to get a building built as opposed to making it into a public ransom over a building. And now this. And so
don't forget about Phoenix, the Phoenix Suns with
absolutely
Hunter Brook Media, Pablo Torre over at Pablo Torre Finds Out, as well as Joe Pompliano over at Huddle Up. There's been a lot of smoke around the mortgage company that Matt Ishbia owns and used as collateral to buy the Phoenix Suns, and the stock price has plummeted. And JP Morgan might have a thing or two to say about that when he borrowed against, or essentially said, I don't have the cash to buy the Phoenix Suns, but maybe you guys can loan me some money to go into this sale. And as long as my stock price is okay, we'll be all right. Well, the stock price is not okay. So there's a lot of smoke around that as well. But for the record, Matt Ishbia says everything's fine. He also said that before he traded Kevin Durant, and said that 29 other owners or 26 other owners or GMs would rather switch positions with the Phoenix Suns. And then they had an awful year after he said that. We'll see what happens with the Phoenix Suns. The Clippers organization, the investigation into Kawhi and Steve Ballmer, that Pablo Torre has led that investigation as well publicly. We'll see the fallout from that, if there is any. Adam Silver's got a lot on his plate right now. And you're right to point out, the steward of the NBA right now is Adam Silver, and he's got to uphold the brand, the integrity of the league. There's gambling controversies around the league. And as long as that graph continues to go up and to the right, is Adam Silver doing a good job? And I'd imagine a lot of the owners would say yes, as long as the bubble doesn't burst and these franchise valuations continue to go up and to the right, that's fine. But if they suddenly have a little bit of a crash here, that would not be great for anybody, including you and I. I'm just upset, Dan, that our bid fell short.
I was a little shy.
We want to break some news here that we put in $12.50, 50 cents, and
that's right.
Did not go through, did not win.
And even that, I had to liquidate the entire college fund to get to $12.50, which maybe is a worse statement about where things are for me individually. It's wild. This is the Lakers we're talking about, right? Like one of these sort of Tiffany organizations in all of professional sports. And now in the last couple of weeks, it's become like, as you said, it's flipped like a house on HGTV. And it is at one of the things at the center of like gigantic questions about who can own things and what, and federal investigations and yada, yada, yada. I mean, we'll see. We'll see where it goes. My guess is, to your broader point, the question about Adam Silver is like, yeah, as long as the line keeps going up and to the right, I think the people for whom he works are going to say, you know, let's keep it going, keep it rolling. And what other pools of money are there that we can get involved in? And we'll see who winds up being paying the price on the back end of that. It usually isn't the billionaires that wind up in trouble on those sorts of things. So more to be revealed.
Yeah, we are going to keep things rolling here with the Lakers, just kind of spending a little bit more time on the Lakers basketball. On the floor. There's actual basketball stuff.
Imagine that.
So we're going to get into that here in a little bit, right after the break. All right, this week's big number is 12, 5, and then 8 zeros with a dollar sign. That is the reported sale price of the Los Angeles Lakers, $12.5 billion. Just as we had this note, this graphic up there, Dan, is that it was a year ago that Alex Rodriguez and Mark Laurie bought the Minnesota Timberwolves for a reported price of $1.5 billion. So it is now another NBA team has gone 10x that, maybe 11x somewhere in there. I don't know. I'm not very good at math. Not quite 10. It's more like 9. You know what? Those are big numbers. We need little numbers here, Dan. What's your first little number about the Lakers this upcoming season?
Well, first things first, the last time I was around 8 zeros was in the media workroom at the finals. Hey-o, look at those guys out there, zeros working on the media beat just like me. First little number this week is 20. That is where the 2025 Los Angeles Lakers finished in adjusted defensive rating, according to our pals at dunksandthrees.com. Adjusted defensive rating is a stat that measures how many points per 100 possessions you give up. It's adjusted for the strength of the offenses that you have faced. 20th place at a 30-team league, not great. LA's 20th place finish was the second worst of any team that made the playoffs last year, behind only the Denver Nuggets. They also lost in the first round, so not great company to keep. On a basic level, this kind of seems to be the state of affairs for the Lakers. If you expect an offense that's led by Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves to be awesome, you do need the defense to be at least all right in order to be an actual contender. And I just double check this to make sure. Going back to 2013-14, every champion has finished at least league average or above in adjusted defensive rating. Most of them really high, squarely in the top 10. So the argument is, like, this is why you get Walker Kessler. It's why you take a bunch of flyers on guys on the wing. Tom, are you bullish or bearish on the idea of the Lakers making a significant jump from that 20th place defensive finish?
Well, I think considering the Utah Jazz have set records in each of like the last 5 years of the worst defenses in NBA history on a per possession basis, the Walker Kessler signing, look, he's better than that. I'm just saying the history is not on the side of Walker Kessler at a team level. Of course, he only played 5 games last year, but he's brought in to anchor at least a defense that can tread water enough for Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves. And if you are worried about a Luka Doncic defense, a Luka Doncic-led defense winning a championship, Nico Harrison would like to agree with you. Put his arm around you and say, see, this is what I mean. We went to the NBA Finals
you
with an 18.
You see what I'm saying.
Yeah. Defense wins championships. And I won't be around to see it with the Mavs, but still probably believes that Doncic cannot win a championship as long as he's not giving it better defensively. But Luka Doncic last year, the Lakers, you mentioned 20th ranking. Before that, the Lakers were at 14th. So they were able, you know, as the trade happened with the Dallas Mavericks, Luka comes over. They were able to be about an average defense going into the playoffs. And then the Dallas Mavericks in that 2024 magical run to the NBA Finals, they finished the regular season with the 18th ranked defense. So right around there, right, is kind of what you're talking about, is league average is the floor for a championship contender. And Luka Doncic dropped the word championships in his public support for the new ownership group. Maybe he sees the roster and realizes maybe this is not championship caliber, but maybe this is just like the first iteration. And then a year from now, when we can really assess this new group of players, then we'll try to get into that top 10 defense range. It doesn't seem like to me a real championship contender as it's built right now. But you know what? The upside is certainly kind of in that upper crust of the Western Conference. I just don't think it's reasonable to suspect that this defense that hasn't played together under JJ Redick can be expected, given the whole year missed from Walker Kessler last year, that they're going to be able to be a good defensive unit right away.
If they're going to be a real contender, it's probably going to come down to the strength of that starting lineup, which is our second little number this week, plus 10.41. That is the projected net rating of the five-man unit of Luka, Austin Reeves, Walker Kessler, Quentin Grimes, and Jake LaRavia, according to a fun tool at the Basketball Index. They have a lineup analyzer, our friends at the B-Ball Index, that's basically a tool where you can plug in any five players in the league. So like last year, the fact that we didn't have, as you see it here on the screen for our YouTube viewers, you know, Walker Kessler didn't play with the Lakers, and Quentin Grimes was in at Philly, and you know, not everybody was here. But if you sort of just plug in their individual skill sets and say, how might this cohere together, this gives you a projected outcome. And the projected outcome here is pretty freaking good. 10.41 offensive rating, net rating rather, like an elite offense, a better than average defense. Only 16 lineups in the NBA last year that logged at least 150 minutes were plus 10 or better. So if you actually got a significant amount of run from this five-man unit, be in pretty good shape. And if you plug in, as you mentioned, Walker Kessler only played a handful of games last year in Utah before suffering his shoulder injury. You plug in the 2024-25 version where he actually played, that actually goes up to 11.64. So the general vibe here is you put together a couple of shot creators in Luka and Reeves. You put together a couple of like plug-in, fill-in-the-gaps off-ball players in Grimes and LaRavia. You've got Kessler as the screen and dive big man, hitting the offensive glass, protecting the rim behind everybody. And it should, on paper, sing pretty well. So generally speaking, Tom, what do you think? Does that pass the smell test to you?
It does. I mean, I think the idea of everyone's healthy and playing at a high level, they can reach that level. Sure. Just as a... as a comparison, again, you mentioned that 10.4 net rating. The New York Knicks in the postseason last year, that starting lineup was a plus 12.5. And the San Antonio Spurs starting lineup was a plus 22.4 in the postseason last year. The Detroit Pistons starting lineup, about 10, plus 10. So this right here is projecting one of the better, if not best, starting lineups in the NBA, if everyone's healthy, of course, given the skill sets. This is not just pure talent. This is also looking at how the pieces fit together in terms of skill sets.
Correct.
And so if you get a big rim-running center in Walker Kessler to fit with Luka Doncic, that does seem like to me a pretty smart addition for the Lakers. Of course, they paid a high price, not just on the contract, but giving up assets in order to pry him away from Utah. They backed themselves into a pretty big corner here with the asset that they basically, all the assets in the first round picks that they give up for Walker Kessler. And I'm guessing their analytics department or their scouting department envisioned that Luka plus Austin Reeves and Walker Kessler will have the upside of a championship caliber core. But again, for a team that struggled with health last year, that finished 20th in defensive rating adjusted for opponents, and you throw in the fact that Luka missed 18 games last year, Austin Reeves missed 31 games, and Walker Kessler missed 77. The upside here in that lineup is that Jake LaRavia did not miss a game. Depending on who you ask, that's a good thing or a bad thing that Jake LaRavia played in 82 straight games last year, one of the only handful of players to do so. But yeah, I like the fit of those players playing together, but as we know, if we covered ad nauseum on this show, it's one thing to have on paper a really good lineup, and then another thing to have the health on your side in order to pull it off.
Absolutely. And also, I'm making the assumption that that is the starting five, right? Like, we don't know. I think it's pretty fair to say that those, that Luka, Reeves, and Kessler are going to be there, and then where do you fill in on the wing? The thing that's a sort of like a mini number here, side note, that's sort of interest here is the shooting component to it. Like, you referenced the Dallas finals run from a couple years ago and the way that that team was built around Luka. It does feel like this is intentionally moving in that direction, where the Lakers now have, let me check to make sure I have this right, there's 9 players on the current Lakers roster that shot at least 36% on catch and shoot threes last season. And if you expand it to the last 2 seasons, it's 11. It's basically everybody but the centers and like Adu Tierro. That's kind of, you know, like where we are with that. They built a team where it's screen and dive big man, rim protecting big, offensive rebounder, like they had with Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively II. and shooters, a second creator like Kyrie Irving, Austin Reeves, and then shooters everywhere and like some kind of 3-and-D mix and match wings. I think that it will be interesting to see if they can get to that level, but that seems to be the model here in the same way that for years and years, the idea was you build around LeBron by surrounding him with shooters. Certainly seems to be what they're trying to do in LA, surrounding Luka with shooting in that same way. Get us to our third and final little number this week, talking to some of that roster shuffling, 28. That was the average age of the Los Angeles Lakers roster last season. That was the fifth oldest average age in the NBA, according to basketballreference.com. Obviously, that was brought down a little bit by the presence of a certain 40-something-year-old graybeard king. He's no longer around. And also, worth noting, just having one of the older rosters in the league, not necessarily a bad thing in and of itself. The New York Knicks, as you mentioned, the NBA champions of last season, average age of 28.1, right behind the Lakers there. So you certainly can get up there if you need to. It does feel a little bit notable that of the eight oldest players on last year's Lakers roster, seven of them are gone. The only one who's back is Austin Reeves. And right now, the only players who are above that 28-year-old line, that where that was the average age of the Lakers roster last year, it's Reeves, Matisse Thybulle, and Kevon Looney. That's it. Everybody else, 27 and under. And I think that's sort of, it seems notable because I know we've talked a number of times about this maybe being a young man's game. Tom, what do you make of the Lakers looking to get younger across the board as they retrofit around Luka?
Yeah, the other number here is 29.5. That's the average age of the Lakers in the postseason last year, minutes adjusted, meaning if you played more minutes, you get more weight in that average age. So about 30 years old was the average age of the Lakers in the playoffs with Luka hurt and Austin Reeves hurt for most of those minutes and LeBron filling in. Of course, it's going to be pretty high with that outlier skewing the numbers a bit. But that was the oldest team in the playoffs last year, the Lakers. The third oldest team was the New York Knicks at 28.4. Just, you know, as they get into the postseason, they lean on their veterans more, older sure. roster, and they were the third oldest team. The Cleveland Cavaliers also in the Eastern Conference Finals got swept by the Knicks, the second oldest team in the NBA playoff field. On the other side of that, the San Antonio Spurs that the Knicks beat were the third youngest team at 24.3 average age years, 24.3 years old. And right behind them for fifth youngest playoff team was the Oklahoma City Thunder that they beat in the Western Conference Finals. So yeah, I think the Lakers are looking at Luka Doncic and the fact that he doesn't have the same sort of bounce that he did when he was in the bubble, when he was early on making the splash into the league, and realizing that they need athletes around him. And I think with, you know, Walker Kessler, one of the great finishers in the league, and some other guys that can be younger and have bouncier legs around him, it's going to be a much different team than what we saw when Marcus Smart and LeBron James were running up and down the floor. So they definitely made a significant change to get younger. And in this era of the league where it's a lot more up and down, a lot more injuries, you're going to need a lot of fresh legs to endure the NBA season and try to make a run in the postseason and not be a second round out like they were last year. So Dan, yeah, they're trying to get younger for sure and match the timeline of Luka Doncic and the Josh Kushner and Bob Iger era that, who knows, maybe they'll sell in 6 months. We just don't know if they'll see this through.
Yeah, the average age of Lakers ownership dropping precipitously as well. Like the length of tenure.
Well, yeah, length of tenure. Yeah, the average age of the yeah, the Lakers tenure. Bob Iger's like in his 70s and Kushner's 41. So the average age there, I think it evens out. I don't know what the average age of the NBA owner is, but we'll see how that plays out. We haven't checked the wire yet, but maybe there's more about the Buss family. I don't know. But as of this recording, still, we don't know who's running the Lakers. Is it the governor, Jeannie Buss, or is it the new majority ownership in Josh Kushner and Bob Iger? We'll see. But ultimately, Luka Doncic is going to have a younger supporting cast around him. And I've always wanted Luka to play next to Matisse Thybulle just because of the pairing of those two skill sets. Thybulle is one of the best at intercepting passes and leading the fast break. And I think it's going to be really fun to watch the Lakers if all of them are healthy, including Thybulle on that team. So we'll see. JJ Redick with Bronny and all the moving parts upstairs. It's going to be a fun season over there in Lakerland. And it's going to be a fun season for a couple other candidates who are actually going to be playing games, hopefully, in this upcoming season after having a lot of injuries last year. Dan, you wrote an awesome article this week on Yahoo Sports. Dan, you've basically are going to be outlining the top returnee players or returning players, comeback candidates. So we're going to get into that here in just a second after the break. So Dan, I just got back from Tennessee. Okay. There's a lake there that my wife's family, we go to every summer for like a week, just to kind of unplug, unwind in the mountains. And it's great. Her side of the family's from Indianapolis. They've Ooh. Got cousins on that side from Indianapolis. We put up our flags on our little dock on the water. And it said, there's like Purdue, there's Valparaiso, there was Indiana. And then my alma mater, Wake Forest, was on there too. A lot of Indiana. And I kind of feel like they might be hopping on the Game Time app to try to figure out how many games they can go to next year to watch the Pacers and Tyrese Halliburton. And also Zach Edey, big man from Purdue. They probably want to see if he's going to be a star in the NBA. So maybe they're going to hop on the Game Time app to go buy some tickets for those Pacers games and maybe make a little drive over to Memphis or just wait for when Memphis comes into town and Zach Edey. So we'll check to see that out. But they are two players that you're writing about this week at Yahoo Sports. So go check that out this week. Comeback players, Dan, right? We got Tyrese Halliburton and Zach Edey, one of the few players that you are highlighting in this upcoming piece. Let's talk about Tyrese Halliburton first. I don't know where I'm at on this because it's very rare to have, Dan, a team like the Indiana Pacers go from minutes from winning the NBA championship in Game 7 in OKC 2 years ago and then fall all the way down to 19-63 the following year. And the missing piece in that is Tyrese Halliburton. Where are you on the impact of Tyrese Halliburton and what we can expect to see from the Indiana Pacers next year?
Yeah, I'm extremely high on Tyrese Halliburton and the perspective influence we can have there. I mean, like, there are relatively few teams in the NBA where everything that they want to be and do emanates from one person to the degree that it does for the Pacers and Tyrese Halliburton, right? Like, from when he got there, I think it was the 2022 trade deadline and the deal from Sacramento, the style completely shifted. Rick Carlisle tossed him the keys to the offense and said, we're going to go the way you want to go. I'm going to trust you. I'm not going to be calling plays from the sidelines over and over again. And they basically instantly became a high speed, high ball movement, low turnover, high offensive efficiency team. The two healthy seasons that he had after that, Eastern Conference Finals, NBA Finals. And then last year, of course, he's not there and the entire bottom drops out. So what is interesting to me about it, obviously, yes, it's been, I think it will have been something like 19 months between the last time we saw him and the next time he plays when we get to the start of the regular season. All systems appear to be go. You know, he has said publicly, like, I feel great if the season started today, I'd be ready to go. Obviously, conditioning will be something he's got to get used to over the course of preseason and training camp and everything, and then into the regular season. But the expectation is when the Pacers kick things off, he is going to be at the controls full go. And he's coming back to almost the same team he left. Like, most of the rest of that core, with the exceptions of Miles Turner, which is a big exception, and Benedict Mathurin, who then was in the deal going to the Clippers, most of the rest of that core is still there, with Pascal Siakam and Andrew Nembhard and Aaron Nesmith and TJ McConnell. And, the rest of that core that played all those minutes in the run-up to the finals, those are still there. The big shift is they made the deal to bring in Ivica Zubac in the middle of kind of a lost season last year, knowing they needed to have a five of the future. And they made a big gamble, putting the, sort of interestingly lottery protected first round pick in this year's draft in the deal. The lottery balls don't go their way. They lose what winds up being the number five pick goes to the Clippers. They draft Keaton Wagler there. But you have a, you know, an all-star caliber, all-NBA caliber center in Ivica Zubac, but a very different style of one, not a pick-and-pop big man, a pick-and-roll big man who's much more of an offensive rebounder than Turner was. And how does Halliburton find the chemistry and the rhythm with him? How does everybody else play off of that? Because the Pacers had gotten to a point in those finals where it was like, they could play it blindfolded. Like, they knew where one another were. They were in such a rhythm and such a flow. How long does it take for that to come back? And if it does take a little while to come back in an East that has kind of grown around them, do the Pacers find themselves in a difficult spot in terms of the seeding battle, right? Like, they were a 50-win team that was up in the top four, maybe not so much now. But if they're able to work out the kinks, find that rhythm, I don't know how many teams, including the one that just won the championship, whom Indiana had ushered out of the playoffs the two preceding springs, I don't know how many people are going to want to see Tyrese Halliburton come springtime, come April, May, and June, because the last time we watched him there, he was an absolute killer, and we were doing episodes about his crunch time scoring and the clutch shooting that he was doing. So I think I'm really bullish on it. I believe that his game should return without a dramatic decrease in his speed, his quickness, his athleticism, all that, and his vision, his shooting, all that stuff was top-notch when he left. I expect it to be right back there.
Yeah, Dan, you mentioned the clutch scoring. Here's the stat. Let's remind people the clutch scoring that Tyrese Halliburton, yes, the heater that he was on in the postseason, and just last year, the full season that he was before he got hurt. Tyrese Halliburton shot 13 of 15 that season on shots to tie or go ahead in the final 2 minutes of games. That means that he shot 87% in those super clutch opportunities. When the game got tight and close, he was, I mean, the Knicks know this better than anybody, he was the most clutch player in the NBA. And six of those makes were threes. So as we highlighted on this show and elsewhere at Yahoo, his effective field goal percentage was literally over 100%. on those shots. He was more efficient than making every single two-pointer on those shots because so many of them were threes. It was just absurd that the average point per shot was like 2.1 whenever he took those clutch shots. So it was just nuts. And they were really good, you mentioned. I'll also mention that Zach Edey, another Indiana hero, Zach Edey, when he was on the floor the last two seasons for the Memphis Grizzlies, their record was 42-35. They've completely overhauled the rest of the roster. But a guy who played in just 11 games last year and has been facing a lot of injuries to his ankle, his feet, he's also one of these guys that can completely change the fortunes of a team. And a big reason why I'm very bullish on the Memphis Grizzlies this upcoming season. I had him as a big over on this show last time we were doing this. And I think even with KOC reiterating, I think the Memphis Grizzlies are going to be the surprise team next year. And a big reason is that guy in the middle, Zach Edey.
And it's just something we haven't seen very much, right? Like, you go back to in his rookie season as well. And the end of that, I mean, he missed some time there, but was mostly like, you know, a strong starter. I think an all rookie selection for a team that won 48 games and made the playoffs. But going back to their season ends in the first round at the hands of the Oklahoma City Thunder in that season. So 27 months, we've seen him for less than 300 minutes in that span, like a course of like maybe of over 2 years. But in those, I think it was 284 was the total number last season. He looked like Godzilla. He was like, it was awesome. He was, you know, double-double in 25 minutes a game, 60-something percent from the field. You know, the opponent's field goal percentage at the rim dropped by like 10% when he was the one contesting. He was like a top three rebounding rate on both ends of the floor. Like, the Grizzlies were awful last year, and a lot of that was injuries, and a lot of that was the, you know, the Ja Morant drama, and a lot of that was they're going to, you know, the midseason move to get off of Jaren Jackson Jr. But like, when he played, they were actually pretty good. And now it's 11 games and it's 284 minutes. And so what is the sample? You know, how much do you privilege that? But as you said, even going back to the rookie season, when he's been on the floor, they've been a pretty interesting team and they've won more than they've lost. And so, you know, as the Grizzlies are in this overturn, overhaul, new era, you know, revamping and retooling. He comes back theoretically healthy, hopefully healthy, and it's him next to Cameron Boozer, next to Cedric Coward. You know, they bring in Jeremy Grant in the deal from Portland. They've got hopefully healthy again. Like, they're basically, their entire backcourt was hurt last year, but it's Jalen Wells comes back as another like big long defender on the wing, on the perimeter, size there. You got Scottie Pippen Jr. with Ty Jerome at the point, like guys who can make plays, but also are like opportunistic with their hands. There is like the outlines here of a pretty interesting team. And I think the fact that we haven't seen Edie, and even when we saw Edie, it was like, he's the side dish next to these established stars that we know. Can he pair with Ja Morant? How does he work off of Jaren Jackson Jr.? They are talking about him as like a more central figure in this rebuild now. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see what that looks like. I mean, just stylistically, as you know, the league moves more toward, can we find more stretch guys? Can we find more, or just like simple one, you know, like screen cut, one dive kind of guy. Like, he's an interesting type of big who's a little bit different. It's like, what if Steven Adams was a little bit bigger and had more stuff to his offensive game? We need more weird sort of guys in there. I kind of like the idea of, what does that look like next to Cam Boozer, next to Cedric Coward, and all these myriad young guys the Grizzlies are trying to throw out there. They could wind up being pretty good pretty quick if he's able to stay on the floor.
You talk about weird guys. You got two of them on the show right here, Tom.
That's exactly
and
right.
Dan. We got an email this week that we need to talk about, Dan.
Yes, we do.
This was incredible. We made a request to our audience. After we had another zero as our big number, how many times have we had zero as our big number? Dan, you put it out and asked our audience to come up with that number. And Nikhil Dewan just emailed us this past week. Super fan. Thank you so much for sending us this email. Dan, would you like to read the note here that he gave us, the big number that he was able to send to us? This is pretty astonishing. We mentioned that the $12.5 billion number from the Lakers sale price, there's eight zeros in it. And it turns out 8% of our shows have the zero as a big number. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. He led the email, by the way, with Tom, Dan, big fan of the show, and Tom of your work specifically. Rude, a little rude. I'm not like, I'm here too. I'm the little numbers part of the show. You know, I'm part of it. Yes, Nikhil, an incredible response. Very, you know, very formula driven and really rigorous. Zero is our most common big number. It has been the big number 7 times out of 8, or 8%. Runners up, 1 and 15, 3 appearances each. And the 7 zeros we have going back to May 7th of 2025. Zero is the number of games Stephen Curry had missed in 16 years due to a hamstring injury. 0 pieces of evidence the Clippers produced on the cap circumvention allegation. That's a fun one.
That's a good one.
0 games that Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis finished together post Luka trade. 0 championships in Clippers franchise history, and 0 final appearances in Clippers franchise history. We're kind of dunking on the Clippers a little bit here, perhaps justified. 0 fourth quarter minutes for Jaren Jackson Jr. after joining the Jazz prior to his season-ending surgery. 0 times the 76ers have reached the conference finals in the last 25 years. And then the inciting number here, 0 Eastern Conference teams projected to have 53 or more wins next season. So, I mean, we are, it is nice to have the data to put to my hunches. Mike D'Antoni said something similar about when he got to the, during his Hall of Fame induction ceremony, when he got to the Houston Rockets, and Daryl Morey was like, all that stuff about how fast you should play in the threes. Yeah, totally. That's exactly it. We have the numbers to show it. And D'Antoni was like, finally, I've got the data to prove my hunch. That's what happened here. I thought, I'm pretty sure we've used zero a bunch. And our readership, our listeners come through and they let us know, our viewers letting us know that that is in fact correct. And it was just, it is a stunning level of commitment to the bit to come through with the full like timestamps for when we say the big number, the percentages all really nailed down, and it resulted in a pack of stickers going out to our winner here. So here's what I'm going to say. I don't know exactly what the next time is that I will be like, hey, I want our listeners to do something. But when I ask, you guys need to beat, this is the bar.
The bar.
This is now the bar to beat. It's a very high bar, but we expect a lot from you. And I don't know that we're going to beat packages of stickers very often, but we might have to raise our bar too. But for right now, the most important thing is I was right and our listeners rule. And thank you very much.
That was incredible. I think that is maybe my favorite email I've gotten. It's such a nerdy thing to say, but
well, yeah, the part where he likes yours work specifically. Of course you love it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The check's in the mail, by the way. You can get your stickers from Dan, but I've got some other stuff that'll stick around in your bank account a little longer. So yeah, dude, this was awesome. And especially because I don't know, we do this show every week and we kind of put it out into the ether and just it's very wholesome to see this, that there are people who care and listen and want to have some fun with this. So thank you. Generally, that's the vibe that we want to do with this show is that it nerds out. We hit serious topics here as we just did with the Lakers sale, but we also like to have a little fun. So thanks for being silly with us, Nick, and I appreciate you for listening to the show, and your stickers and your check is in the mail. thanks to Emmy and Ryan for an August show. It's not the easiest thing to produce with all the news swirling around and people kind of kicking up their feet, but we're not doing that here on this show. Certainly not Emmy, who right before we went to air was like 8 zeros, kind of like the same number percentage of zeros as the big number. And I'm just sitting there, She is the perfect producer for this show, that she can come up with that off the rip. So thank you to Emmy. Thank you to Ryan and everyone at Yahoo Sports. Don't forget to subscribe at Yahoo Sports on our YouTube channel. Join the thousands of us here. And it makes a much more dynamic show. You can see all the different graphics that our team puts together. And especially if you wanted to see Adam Silver and Bob Iger and Josh Kushner sitting together at a tennis event, come to the right place, the Big Number YouTube channel. So go check that out at Yahoo NBA. Thanks so much. And Dan, we'll talk next week.